Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we open our show with an update on the burning issue across our state, namely a dozen major wildfires and the devastating impacts they are having on communities throughout California, including some of our state's historic places and national treasures at risk. We'll have news about some wet weather coming into our region and where you can stock up on free sandbags to prevent flooding and erosion. On our Media Watch report, hear about the sale of National Geographic magazine to the Fox Media Organization and what that could mean for the future of scientific coverage in one of America's most esteemed publications, now in the hands of a prominent climate change denier. Our newsmaker interview today is Roger Kopic, a local computer wizard and writer for East County Magazine, who will be telling us about his analysis of satellite data from NASA and other sources. He's found a CO2 hotspot right here in our region, pumping out harmful greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. We'll tell you where it is and why there's a mystery here to be solved. Hear about the dire impacts of the recent hot weather on dogs along local trails and what you should know to keep your dog safe during extreme heat. On our Green Scene Report, learn why a court has stepped in to ban a pesticide found to be harmful to bees. Learn about a volunteer opportunity on a parks advisory board in Spring Valley. Hear about a package of medical marijuana regulation bills that have passed the state legislature and are now on the governor's desk. Learn about a new law protecting condominium owners' rights to tear out turf and put in artificial grass to save water. We also have news about the suicide of a woman believed to be homeless in El Cajon. Today, we'll be replaying our bookshelf interview with author Susan Mihalik with tips on what you should know when traveling or moving to Baja California. Hear a warning about student loan consolidation scams and get news about a turkey bacon recall. We'll also have some national headline news today from Public News Service, including 20 states getting help processing a backlog of rape evidence, updates on presidential authority to combat climate pollution, and congressional efforts to curb carbon emissions, plus the latest on marriage equality. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Today, as we record our show, much of California is in flames. A dozen major wildfires are burning statewide, some of them consuming entire towns with thousands of homes, historic communities, and redwoods in a national park still at risk. Over 11,000 firefighters are battling these blazes, and days off have been canceled for all CAL FIRE firefighters statewide. Chief Tony Meacham, head of the County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE, wants us to assure you that in San Diego County, all fire stations remain open and are fully staffed. But he warns, while temperatures are cooler than they were last week, conditions remain extremely dry, which is allowing fires to burn at a rapid rate. Fire officials advise the public to spend some time to ensure that you are fully prepared for wildfires. Everyone should have an evacuation plan and know what items to take if a fire threatens the area. You can learn more at readyforwildfire.org. And if you haven't already cleared your defensible space around your home, please do so. Now, here are some updates on three of the most destructive fires currently burning in California. You can find details on all 12 of the fires at the CAL FIRE Incidents webpage online. An explosive wildfire, the Butte Fire, is threatening some of California's most historic Gold Rush towns, including Angels Camp, the site of Mark Twain's famous The Celebrated Tale of the Jumping Frog of Calaveras County story, as well as San Andreas, Pine Grove, and McCombney Hill, a famous ghost town. The Butte Fire is currently threatening over 6,400 homes as well and has already burned 135 houses and many other buildings. Over 100 square miles, 71,000 acres, have been scorched in Amador and Calaveras counties by the blaze that is currently 30% contained. For full details, you can visit the CAL FIRE incident page. Governor Brown declared a state of emergency to help direct more resources to battle this destructive fire. California Senator Barbara Boxer tweeted Saturday night, "My thoughts are with the brave firefighters working 24/7 to save lives and property threatened by the Butte Fire." According to CAL FIRE, over 4,400 firefighting personnel are currently on the scene today. Law enforcement agencies are also dispatching officers to the fire. Sacramento Police tweeted an image of its officers at the the blaze over the weekend with the message, "Our thoughts are with all those impacted by the Butte Fire. Stay safe," to all the fire law agencies battling it tonight. Heavy smoke grounded firefighting aircraft overnight, leaving ground crews to combat the inferno until the dawn as orange flames leap toward the sky outside these small towns that trace their roots back to the gold rush in the mid-19th century that set California on its route to statehood over a century and a half ago. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The fast-moving Rough Fire has charred over 128,000 acres and threatens the famed Grant Grove of ancient sequoia redwood trees in Kings Canyon National Park. The lightning-sparked fire is 29% contained as of this weekend. The grove includes giant sequoias thousands of years old, notably the General Grant tree, named in 1867 after Ulysses S. Grant. The General Grant tree was also declared our nation's Christmas tree by President Calvin Coolidge in 1926. The National Park Service has closed and evacuated the Grant Grove area of Kings Canyon, including John Muir Lodge, all campgrounds, and the John Muir cabins. The Cedar Grove area and all lodgings there are also closed. Those areas will stay closed until at least September 18th. Sequoia National Park remains open, but a smoke advisory is in effect. People with reservations are being given the option to move to an alternative location or reschedule their vacations. The fire has also forced road closures and cancellations of several dark sky festivals in the area. More than 2,500 firefighters are battling the blaze, using bulldozers to cut fire breaks in an effort to save one of California's greatest national treasures. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson. The fast-moving Rough Fire has charred over 128,000 acres and threatens the famed Grant Grove of ancient sequoia redwood trees in Kings Canyon National Park. The lightning-sparked fire is 29% contained as of this weekend. The grove includes giant sequoias thousands of years old, notably the General Grant tree, named in 1867 after Ulysses S. Grant. The General Grant tree was also declared our nation's Christmas tree by President Calvin Coolidge in 1926. The National Park Service has closed and evacuated the Grant Grove area of Kings Canyon, including John Muir Lodge, all campgrounds, and the John Muir cabins. The Cedar Grove area and all lodgings there are also closed. Those areas will stay closed until at least September 18th. Sequoia National Park remains open, but a smoke advisory is in effect. People with reservations are being given the option to move to an alternative location or reschedule their vacations. The fire has also forced road closures and cancellations of several dark sky festivals in the area. More than 2,500 firefighters are battling the blaze, using bulldozers to cut fire breaks in an effort to save one of California's greatest national treasures. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
If you're looking to beat the heat, here's some news you can use. Cooler weather is coming to our region, with the remnants of Hurricane Linda forecast to bring showers starting Monday night through Wednesday. Over an inch of rain could fall in the mountain areas. Daytime temperatures will be 5 to 10 degrees below the normal on Tuesday and Wednesday, the National Weather Service predicts, with warmer weather returning later in the week. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is DeVario Bell.
With more rain forecast this week, the County Department of Public Works is offering free sand and bags to people in our unincorporated areas of the county to help protect homes, neighborhoods, and streets from flooding and erosion problems. Just bring a shovel to any of these fire stations. The Alpine Fire Station on Tavern Road, the Cal Fire Station in Del Zura, the Cal Fire Station in Julian, the Ramona Fire Station, the Palma Valley Rincon Station, the North County Station in Fallbrook, or the Bonita Sunnyside Fire Station in Bonita. Current forecasts are predicting rain could fall through midweek. Even though we've had some unusual rainstorms this summer, the region has still been suffering through record levels of drought this year. And because of that, rains could trigger erosion and even debris flows, especially in areas that are not covered by lawns, trees, or plants. In addition, forecasters are projecting a possible strong El Nino season this winter. The County Office of Emergency Services and the Department of Public Works officials are encouraging residents to look around their properties and see if they're in a flood-prone area near hillsides with little or dead vegetation that could erode, and look for ways to keep soil in place, especially on slopes. You can use mulch, terrace your slopes, or plant a variety of ground covers and shrubs to prevent erosion. Water runoff, mud, and debris swept downstream by rains can damage homes, clog storm drains and culverts, and flood roadways. You can find more information, including about erosion control, on the county's Ready San Diego website, as well as the Office of Emergency Services Flooding Preparedness Facts and Resources webpage. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Media Watch report for KNSJ. First published back in 1888, the National Geographic magazine has long been one of the world's most popular and respected journals chronicling science and culture around the globe. But now, the National Geographic Society has announced that the nonprofit magazine is turning for-profit, and that National Geographic magazine has been sold to 21st Century Fox, a corporation owned by Rupert Murdoch, the owner of Fox News. Fox agreed to pay $725 million to the National Geographic Society to acquire a 73% share, with the society retaining just 27%. In addition to the magazine, Murdoch's media empire will now include National Geographic Studios, digital and social media, maps, children's media, and more. The sale has led many readers, as well as scientists, environmentalists, and journalists, raising concerns over the future of the magazine's reputation and credibility. The National Geographic Society was founded by scientific-minded leaders, including Alexander Graham Bell, inventor of the telephone, as well as mapmakers and explorers. Early editions focused on scientific expeditions. The first issue promised to help spread news of research, quote, so that we may all know more of the world upon which we live, unquote. Through the years, the National Geographic magazine has covered topics that include climate change, evolution, and anthropological discoveries, deforestation, endangered species, industrial pollution, and environmental protection. While Fox has taken a pro-industrial, anti-environmental, and anti-science stance on many such issues. In 2013, the Union of Concerned Scientists found that Fox aired misleading information on climate science 72% of the time. Important projects that National Geographic has sponsored include Robert Perry's expedition to the North Pole, Jacques Cousteau's underwater exploration, the Leakey's research on the history of human evolution in Africa, and Jane Goodall's studies on chimpanzees. Rupert Murdoch has made numerous climate change denial statements, including these: "We should approach climate change with great skepticism," and "Climate change has been going on for as long as the planet is here." In fact, a 2013 study by scientists at Stanford University found that climate change is occurring 10 times faster now than at any time in the past 65 million years. News of the National Geographic's sale to Murdoch, an infamous climate change denier, set loose a flurry of posts on social media and news outlets denouncing the action. Many readers said they will cancel their decades-long subscriptions. Occupy Democrats posted this message about the deal on Twitter: "It's like the fox buying the henhouse. They sold their souls for $725 million. A Washington Post reader wrote, "This is sad news, sad indeed. Next thing you know, the magazine will have drawings of humans riding on dinosaurs." Others voiced fears that the magazine could run stories seeking to push creationism, downplay negative impacts of corporate polluters and fossil fuels, and seek to debunk climate change, despite the fact that 97% of the world's climate scientists believe it is real and man-made. And yet others applauded the sale. Another reader posted his support on the Washington Post site, adding, "Climate hysterics are desperately fearful of contrary evidence and opinion, hence their alarm." National Geographic CEO Gary Nell has cited financial need to justify the sale, telling employees in a staff meeting that the nonprofit society faced enormous and real existential risks if it didn't sell, the Washington Post reports. But a Washington Post investigation found that financial peril is not really apparent in the organization's financial disclosures obtained through public records. In fact, its revenues grew 16% in 2013, the last year for which the records are available, with $500 million total revenues and a $25 million surplus. Net assets also grew 20%, giving the society a net worth of almost $900 million. That's just shy of $1 billion. Moreover, the organization's officers were highly paid as well. Nell's predecessor, John Fahey, raked in over $5 million as chief executive in 2013, up dramatically from just about $1.5 million in 2012. Charity Navigator reports that's among the highest salaries for a nonprofit in the nation. Now, while the magazine has gone for profit, the National Geographic Society itself will remain nonprofit, still dedicated to exploring and mapping the world. But it no longer has a publication in which to share those scientific findings free of bias or censorship.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Roger Kopic. Roger has written a series for us on climate change issues, which some of you may have read in our Green Scene section on East County Magazine. He has a master's degree in computer science, but he's here today to share a mystery with you, and you're going to hear all about the CO2 hotspots in our region. Roger, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Miriam.
Tell us a little bit about your background in computer science. I understand that you are one of the people who was responsible for helping to build the internet. Give us a few details.
I introduce myself as one of the million or so people that is responsible for the internet. My master's degree work was on language translation, and it got used in the 90s for grammar checkers and language translators.
So if you use a grammar checker or a spell checker, chances are that's an algorithm that you designed. Is that correct?
If you used one back in the 90s, yeah. But today my work has gotten replaced by something called the statistical algorithm. Nothing is permanent in the area of computer science.
Okay. Anyway, obviously, Roger's a very smart guy here. And the latest project he's gotten involved in is climate change. Tell us what got you interested in that, Roger.
I have a curious son who asks intelligent questions. He was working on a science project for our local Greater San Diego Science and Engineering Fair, and he was looking at global warming and planetary temperatures. And he came to me and said, "Daddy, how do I get the jigglies out of this graph?"
The jigglies. What does that mean?
That was his term. He liked to make up words back then. So I said, "Son, what you do is you take a rate transform. Instead of looking at the measures of the planetary temperatures, you look at the change, the rate of change of the planetary temperatures. And when you do that, you get a bunch of points that show some dips in it."
And we're talking about the temperature of the planet.
The rate of change in the temperature of the planet, Miriam.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, let's take those big dips out of it. If one rate of change was a good thing, two rates of change is even better. So the rate of change of the rate of change is, of course, the acceleration. So let's look at the acceleration of the temperature of our planet. And there I got a increase over the last 130 years.
And it's very dramatic. I'm looking at the chart on your shirt. And as for those people, the naysayers, who like to say climate change is cyclical, there's truth. It has been cyclical. If you go back tens of thousands, maybe millions of years, but we have not seen anything approaching the temperatures that we're having today or that we've seen over the last 100 years, where it's been a very steady rise, and that coincides with the dawn of the Industrial Revolution when all the factories were built. Is that an accurate statement,
Roger? When
we
started burning coal and invading methane swamps,
mm-hmm.
Yes. So we start putting CO2 and, to a lesser extent, methane into our atmosphere through something called the greenhouse effect. These gases are transparent to visible light.
So you can't see it, but it's there and it's warming the atmosphere.
But they do not pass infrared radiation.
Okay.
So the sun sits out there, warms the surface of the ground. At night, that warming ground radiates infrared radiation out into space, but gets stopped by the CO2 and the methane in the atmosphere. And that warms the planet.
Now, we know that many credible scientists are saying that we're reaching a tipping point, may even be past it, let's hope not, but the tipping point of no return for basically saving the planet from climate change. And to do that, we have to figure out a way not to put so much CO2 into the atmosphere. So there's a lot of ways that can be done, things like improving car emissions or getting people into mass transit and so forth. But one interesting way is to identify where the biggest CO2 carbon dioxide emitting hotspots are on the planet and go to these factories or whatever they are and reduce the emissions. So you set out with a very interesting project. Tell us about these NASA satellites that had data and what you've done.
Over the last several years, I've been collecting data from satellites from NASA, the Japanese Space Agency, and from European Space Agency.
Wow.
These satellites carry infrared spectrum analyzers and can locate CO2 on the ground.
Very interesting. Now, is it all forms or just certain forms? For example, methane from, you know, cattle ranches, or are we talking more factories or all of the above?
Just CO2. The current one is just CO2. There have been other ones that were broad spectrum and could identify CO2, methane, and several other greenhouse gases.
So you have taken this data from the NASA satellites and these satellites from these other nations as well, crunched the numbers, and came up with a chart to see where the biggest CO2 emitters, the hot spots, so to speak, in Southern California are. And I guess the good news is you didn't really find one in San Diego where the CO2 is from a lot of smaller sources like vehicles. But, wow, over in neighboring Imperial County, you kind of hit the jackpot. Tell us what you found.
Boy, did I hit the jackpot. I got a 6.5... Z-score. Now, for those study statistics, a Z-score is the number of standard deviations away from the mean. If a teacher grades on the curve, he or she will give somebody who is 3 standard deviations above the mean an A.
There you go. So if you're emitting 3.5 times the deviations.
6.5 times.
6.5 times double more than the mean. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's centered in the north of the Salton Sea, where the Whitewater River meets the Salton Sea.
So here's the mystery, listeners. This is not an area that's known for huge industrialization. We don't have big factories. As far as we know, there's no big coal-fired power plants or anything like that out there. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
So the $64,000 question, so to speak, is
what is causing this CO2 hotspot? You have some theories about it, Roger.
Is there a chemical reaction when the water in the Whitewater River meets the Salton Sea?
Very interesting, because that is a notoriously polluted river. It's one of the most polluted rivers anywhere that I'm aware of, between agricultural runoff and all of that. And, of course, the Salton Sea doesn't drain. It's not a natural lake, really, and it's fed right now primarily by the runoff from agriculture. I don't know. Maybe we are getting a reaction.
The beaches of the river are dead fish bones. Yeah, it's a pretty polluted place.
So this could add fuel to the arguments about the need to clean up the Salton Sea and to clean up the river out there that feeds it, that's bringing not only pollutions that we already know are bad for people's health, bad for wildlife, but may also be bad for the atmosphere and climate change.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have to do something to stop CO2. In my article in the East County Magazine, Global Warming, Has Anybody Done Anything?
Yeah.
I show that the CO2 rise on our planet is a slow exponential, relentless exponential.
So far, nothing we've done has really made a significant
difference.
Dent.
No difference.
Wow.
All the marches, all the treaties, all the teach-ins, everything we've done has done nothing. It is a simple statistical test would detect even the slightest increase or decrease. It's not. It's a simple exponential rise.
Could that be not that we're doing nothing, but maybe the efforts that's being done in some areas to reduce CO2 pollution has perhaps not been enough to offset other places, like, say, China, where they're opening all kinds of new coal-fired power plants, and so overall, the planet is continuing to warm, despite the efforts. I guess if there were no efforts, it might be even worse. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. The CO2 on our planet is well mixed. It takes about 4 years for CO2 emitted one place to cover the planet. Mm-hmm.
So I understand that you're planning a field trip out to the Imperial Valley, the Salton Sea, to go take a look and try to learn more. Is that right?
I've got a CO2 measuring instrument and an oxygen tank for myself. It tend to approach the spot where the Whitewater River and the Salton Sea meet. Back of the envelope calculation shows that place is so hot I might need that cylinder of oxygen. I'm an old man who's had a couple of heart attacks, so I have to be careful.
Well, take care of yourself out there, Roger, and we definitely look forward to having you back on the show to find out the answer to this mystery once you've gone out to the Salton Sea and learned more about what's causing the CO2 hotspot in our region. Roger, I'm going to let you have a final word today. What else would you like our listeners to know about the climate change issue and the CO2 hotspots that we haven't already mentioned?
The CO2 hotspots published in the East County Magazine are part of a larger project. I'm compiling a directory of CO2 emitters on planet Earth. And the hope is to distribute that to CO2 activists so that the CO2 emitters will know that they can't hide.
So ordinary citizens can go out and track down these CO2 emitters and then advocate for action to get that changed.
Carry a protest sign. Let them know that they shouldn't be doing that.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much, Roger, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Leon Thompson with a warning for dog owners on East County Magazine. A bulldog died of heat stroke at Mission Trails Regional Park on September 7th. As a result, the park posted warnings urging owners not to take dogs on trails during the excessive heat. But some ignored the warnings, including the owner of another dog that nearly suffered heat stroke a couple of days later, Fox 5 News reports. In extreme heat, giving dogs water to drink may not be enough. Wetting down the outside of the body can help cool their core temperature. But the smartest move is to leave pets home when hiking in extreme heat. Besides heat stroke, hot pavement can burn dogs' paw pads in extreme hot weather. Heat stroke can occur in any breed, though it's most common in long-haired dogs and breeds with flat faces that have difficulty breathing. Symptoms of overheating in pets include excessive panting or difficulty breathing, increased heart and respiratory rate, drooling, mild weakness, stupor, seizure, elevated body temperature, or collapse.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Leon Thompson with the Green Scene Report. The U.S. Ninth Court of Appeal in San Francisco has revoked the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's approval of the pesticide sulfoxaflor because it is highly toxic to bees. Pesticide is sold under the brand names Closer and Transform. Sulfoxaflor, a neonicotinoid, was approved by the EPA in 2013. From April 2014 to April 2015, losses of honeybee colonies plunged 42%, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Judge Mary M. Schroeder wrote, "Bees are essential to pollinate important crops, and in recent years have been dying at an alarming rate. The decision concluded, given the precariousness of bee populations, leaving the EPA's registration of sulfoxaflor in place risks more potential environmental harm than vacating it. The court ruled that the EPA's approval was made without any meaningful study. Reuters reports that Dow has said it disagrees with the court's decision and will work with the EPA to implement the order and to promptly complete additional regulatory work to support the registration of the products. Bees pollinate 25% of the food consumed in the U.S. The bee decline has prompted a White House task force to study the dire situation. Neonicotinoids are particularly dangerous to bees since some research indicates bees are actually attracted to crops sprayed with neonicotinoids, a nicotine-derived chemical. In California, sulfoxaflor has been approved for use on lettuce crops only, but will now be banned for all crops. Nationwide, it is used to control aphids and other sucking pests on a wide range of crops, including citrus, cotton, strawberries, wheat, and soybeans, among others. While environmental experts have blamed neonicotinoid pesticides for the decimation of the bee populations, the chemical industry has contended that the decline is caused by other factors, such as bee mite infestation.
The county is seeking volunteers for the San Miguel Local Park District Citizen Advisory Board in Spring Valley. The organization provides community input and recommendations to the director of the San Diego County Parks and Recreation Department about maintenance operations and budget for park facilities and recreation programs in Spring Valley, says James Camo, the chair of the Spring Valley Community Planning Group. If you're interested in volunteering, you can contact Mr. Camo at jascomeau@yahoo.com. This has been a public service announcement for the County of San Diego.
A trio of bills to regulate medical marijuana in California has passed the legislature and now await Governor Jerry Braun's signature. The measures cover the billion-dollar cannabis industry from farming to dispensaries. A new Bureau of Medical Marijuana will issue licenses for transportation and distribution. In addition to state licenses, local, city, or county licensing will also be required. But jurisdictions with existing registrations can keep them, and voters can also weigh in on issues such as taxing the growing or sale of medical marijuana. The new legislation, if signed, will define medical marijuana as an agricultural product subject to regulations regarding water use, pesticides, and more, overseen by the Department of Food and Agriculture. Edible marijuana products will be subject to testing and labeling under jurisdiction of the Department of Public Health. In response to law enforcement concerns, former felons would be banned from getting licenses unless they have received a rehabilitation certificate. A provision that would have added a tax to fund environmental cleanup and public safety issues related to the cannabis industry failed to win passage, however, and was removed from the final version of the legislation. The measures come nearly two decades after California voters legalized medical marijuana use in 1996, leading to a patchwork of local laws that have frustrated advocates of medical marijuana. The action also comes just weeks after the National Institute of Health found medical marijuana holds promise to treat cancer, a claim long made by the industry advocates who also tout cannabis as a treatment for conditions ranging from glaucoma to headaches. Next up, an initiative calling for a legalization of recreational marijuana is expected to qualify for the ballot in California after similar measures won passage in Alaska, Colorado, and Oregon, though some restrictions apply. Action to pass legislation regulating medical marijuana was motivated in part by the push for full legalization of recreational pot, lawmakers have said. Medical marijuana remains illegal under federal law, though 23 states have legalized it, making the future still murky should a new administration opt to crack down on cannabis after next year's presidential and congressional elections. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed legislation sponsored by the San Diego County Water Authority that prohibits homeowners associations from banning artificial turf. Assembly Bill 349, authored by Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez of San Diego, takes effect immediately. Assemblymember Gonzalez issued this statement upon passage. Californians are making great strides to reduce their water use and hit aggressive benchmarks for conservation, and this new common sense law will give homeowners one more way to save as this drought continues. The grass may be fake, but the amount of water a homeowner can save by installing it is very real. The new law is important because irrigation accounts for more than half of a typical home's water use in California, and more than a quarter of the state's housing stock is in condos or other common interest developments typically governed by HOAs. Earlier legislation, supported by the Water Authority, prevented common interest developments from prohibiting low water use plants, including those used to replace lawns. Homeowners also can't be fined by HOAs if they cut back watering due to the emergency drought declaration statewide, except in communities using recycled water for landscape irrigation. Mark Weston, chair of the County Water Authority's Board of Directors, says, "We need every water conservation tool available during the current drought and for years to come. Thanks to Assemblymember Gonzalez, this broadly supported legislation ensures that residents and HOAs have the same freedom as other homeowners to choose how to save water outdoors." For more information about water use rules by community, along with details about drought conditions and conservation-related resources, you can visit wheninDrought.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Employees of Advanced Air and Vacuum in Oklahoma responded to a burglary alarm going off on Friday night and made a disturbing discovery. The doors were locked, so they went inside to inspect. They found furniture out of place and an interior door closed. They opened it and heard a gunshot, then found a woman lying on the floor with a gunshot wound and a gun in her hand. The employees left and called El Cajon police. According to Lieutenant Rob Ransweiler, the victim is a woman believed to be a transient who frequents the area. Her identity has not yet been released, pending confirmation by the medical examiner's office. It is unknown how she got inside the business. Anyone with information regarding this investigation may still contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. People with suicidal thoughts are urged to get help by calling the Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-SUICIDE. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
And coming up next, our bookshelf host, Raina Menashe, will be interviewing East County Magazine's very own Baja blogger, Susan Mihalik, about her book for folks interested in living or traveling in Baja, California.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Susan A. Mihalik, author of My Gold Coast Baja, Practical Guide, which has recently been released in its second edition and as an ebook. Welcome, Susan. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you.
Let's start with the topic of your book, Baja, California, or more specifically, the northern tip of Mexico. You moved there from San Diego 11 years ago, and you moved by yourself without a book like yours to follow. Start by telling us a little bit about that journey and what it is about Baja that drew you then and draws you still.
Well, what happened actually is I was going down there for long weekends with a friend that had a house down there, and I noticed after a while I started crying coming back this way on a Sunday evening.
Really?
And I said, I have a solution for that. I was living in Hillcrest at the time, which was very expensive.
Yes.
And I found a place down there for $400 for a house.
Wow.
Now, I didn't realize at the time that my commuting costs were going to make it almost equivalent to living up here by the time you do the insurance in two countries and everything else that's in there. But it was just a comfortable place to live, and actually the demographic is largely single women.
Really?
Which you don't find out till you live there. So... Mm-hmm. For me to say that it's safe down there, I can say that with certainty. I don't know of a single person who's gotten killed that's an American in almost 12 years.
Now, why do you think that the media gives the impression that it is so unsafe?
Well, certain parts of Mexico are. I've already been told I don't want to travel to Sinaloa. I don't want to go to Jalisco. Everybody's heard about Cuidad Juarez, which is right across the border from Texas, where mm-hmm. it's so dangerous, it's crazy. So, like any other country, you have to be very careful about where you are. I would never even visit Detroit in the United States.
Right.
But where I am, it's totally safe. There's 2,000 people in the little town of La Mission. And most of the activity of violence is between the cartel and the police and the military. It doesn't involve a regular citizen at all, ever.
Civilians. And what about finding work in Baja? Is that something that people do or no? They don't.
No, Americans can't find work down there.
Typically,
they are retired and they start their dream business. Two of my best friends down there are winemakers.
Ah.
Now, for them to start a wine business up in Napa or Sonoma would have been almost impossible.
Right.
And my one friend actually makes wine on her back porch.
That's a good story. Well, let's go to your book. It's been called A Primer and Guide for Those Considering Visiting or an Extended Stay in Mexico. Tell us more about the format and purpose of the book. I know you have photos from David Worthy that you include. You have anecdotes and advice on things like medical care and how to move in the first place. So give us a snapshot of your book.
Well, what happened is I started writing for the Baja Times, which Dennis Moore has also written for as a freelancer. And I found that people were really responding to my articles. So, of course, I saved all of those. And then I added in things like the medical care, how do you move there, what's food shopping like, how should you dress in Baja. I mean, leave the gold jewelry at home. Don't cover yourself and make yourself look, you know, ostentatious when you
right.
go out. So it's a primer of how to live there as far as heating your home and all of that. But it's also a sampling of the wineries and the different great restaurants. But I didn't make it like a farmer's guide. I made it
right.
a sampler, I call.
So you use the photos to capture the beauty, not just the information.
Right. It's not all inclusive, but I found when I was there for the first year, every day was like this huge learning curve. You're in a brand new country.
Yes.
And everything's different. And so this, I've had people read it that have just moved there, and they find it invaluable because
mm-hmm.
now they've got, they know at least now to get insurance and what Medicare care is like and dental care,
mm-hmm.
which is a fraction of what it is up here.
Right. And what about the language barrier? Did you know Spanish when you moved there? Did you learn it while you were there?
Well, I had the high school Spanish still back in the brain somewhere, and I find just like any other experience, you just start, you jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would talk to the border guards, or I would talk to the person checking out my groceries. I didn't know very much Spanish, but it's almost all English-speaking
mm-hmm.
because it is so close to the border. The wait staff, the medical people, the doctors,
mm-hmm.
everybody speaks English. So there is no barrier, really.
Interesting. You're from New Jersey, and I know, as an East Coaster, that that's many worlds and cultures away from your current home. Describe for us the locale that you have fallen in love with, the one that most tourists don't see. What are a few of Baja's hidden places?
Oh, that's Guadalupe Valley. That's the wine valley. Now, I brought a bottle of wine up here once to somebody that was really familiar with Sonoma County. He didn't know they'd even made wine in Baja, which is the major wine-growing region. And I'm only 35 minutes away on just a really simple, easy road. And also, what's really interesting about Guadalupe Valley is that there's starting to be these five-star chefs showing up, like Drew Deckman, who had a place in Cabo. And he just closed it, and he's got an outdoor restaurant. They're called campestres. Basically, they put up a wood grill and some kind of shade, and it's a restaurant. No overhead cost. And they're springing up, I'd say, about one every 3 months. There's a new one that opens, and they're amazing. Things like octopus on the grill.
Oh, that sounds good.
And here's another weird one. How about a salad, a romaine lettuce salad? That's wood-fired.
On the grill?
On the grill.
I've never heard of that.
But it was very good. And it's really reasonable. A meal for a person in the wine valley for lunch is $15.
Speaking of money, let's go a little bit more into the financial side of it. The real estate and tax prices that you quote in the book are fantastic. What is the financial side of life typically for an American relocating to Baja other than the less expensive house or apartment?
Well, it's not just that. What most Californians fell in love with when they cashed in their property up here is that the average property that runs about $300,000, the taxes per year are $250 per year, which is phenomenal. Now, I pay $300 for a studio apartment with fantastic views in a gated community.
It can't be that. What about the medical care, the food? Is it just everything across the board?
Everything's cheaper, with the exception of Coca-Cola and beer. I just had a filling last week, and their dentists down there are very caring, and people actually come from France to get dental care in Baja. I guess they have expensive dentists there, too. I had a filling put in. It was very extensive. She drilled for at least half an hour, and it was $25.
Okay. Now, what about the social life? In your book, you talk about how easy it is to make friends over there and get involved in the local art scene, which I find interesting. In your opinion, what is it about Baja that creates a welcoming community for Americans, other than having other Americans there? What is it that is so welcoming?
Well, I found in San Diego, everybody was either on the freeway or working two jobs or doing whatever they had to survive, whereas down there you mostly have retirees. So they had time on their hands. I made good friends within the first 6 months of being there. Whereas I had difficulty in San Diego because I might make a friend and they would be 40 miles from where I live.
Right, right.
But then there's all these different groups you can get into. You can take up horseback riding. You can take up bridge. There's two groups that I think are wonderful for all the single women called Ladies That Lunch. And so we go to these fantastic restaurants you wouldn't normally dream of going to, like Mission 19 in Tijuana, right, and sit there and eat for 4 hours for $40 with drinks.
Now, are there single men there as well? Is that something that is part of the equation? Sometimes?
Sometimes. Well, I consider there's almost two camps. There's the people that sit all day in bars and drink, and of course I don't count them. But you do meet men at events, mm-hmm, by and large, especially like a wine event. Tomorrow night I'm going to a tequila tasting. That's for my favorite charity, which is the libraries down there. Mm-hmm. The Americans have made a major impact on all the volunteerism that they do there.
Awesome. And they have good libraries there, too.
They do now.
Okay.
Because the Americans kind of made that their impact.
And that's very important. Especially for a writer, right? And readers. One more question, Susan. What's next? Is there another book in the works? And if so, will it cover a similar topic or something else entirely?
Well, the new neighborhood I moved into, my two neighbors on one side, Jerry and David, lived in a place called Angel's Camp. And now that's off the grid, which means there's no sewer, there's no water, there's no electricity. And there's a few little places down there. The cover of my book is Campo Lopez, which is another one. But I'm doing a book on Angel's Camp because there's been all of these fascinating people that move there. And people like lawyers and architects from LA that went down there and bought a place on the beach for like $2,000 back in the day. It started in the 60s. It's still fairly active. And I crashed a pig roast there the day after 4th of July. And I was just like, they were so welcoming, and they're like, come back, interview us. We're glad to be part of this project. So I'm going to do a total departure and do something that's about a community that brought surfers and architects and all these different people down to a place where they had to bring coolers and Coleman lanterns initially.
Fascinating. Look forward to seeing that. Our time is up, Susan, but thank you again for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here. I've been excited about this ever since I knew I was going to be doing this interview. Thanks for having me here.
For more information on Susan Mihalik and her work, please visit her Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Susan.Mihalik, which is M-A-H-A-L-I-C-K. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, from the mountains to the sea. With more rain forecast this week, the County Department of Public Works is offering free sand and bags to people in our unincorporated areas of the county to help protect homes, neighborhoods, and streets from flooding and erosion problems. Just bring a shovel to any of these fire stations. The Alpine Fire Station on Tavern Road, the Cal Fire Station in Del Zura, the Cal Fire Station in Julian, the Ramona Fire Station, the Palma Valley Rincon Station, the North County Station in Fallbrook, or the Bonita Sunnyside Fire Station in Bonita. Current forecasts are predicting rain could fall through midweek. Even though we've had some unusual rainstorms this summer, the region has still been suffering through record levels of drought this year. And because of that, rains could trigger erosion and even debris flows, especially in areas that are not covered by lawns, trees, or plants. In addition, forecasters are projecting a possible strong El Nino season this winter. The County Office of Emergency Services and the Department of Public Works officials are encouraging residents to look around their properties and see if they're in a flood-prone area near hillsides with little or dead vegetation that could erode, and look for ways to keep soil in place, especially on slopes. You can use mulch, terrace your slopes, or plant a variety of ground covers and shrubs to prevent erosion. Water runoff, mud, and debris swept downstream by rains can damage homes, clog storm drains and culverts, and flood roadways. You can find more information, including about erosion control, on the county's Ready San Diego website, as well as the Office of Emergency Services Flooding Preparedness Facts and Resources webpage. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Tasha Matthews with East County Magazine. Kraft Heinz Food Company, a Newberry, South Carolina establishment, is recalling more than 2 million pounds of turkey bacon products that may be adulterated because it was spoiled before the best when used date, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Food and Safety and Inspection Services announced today. The company has received reports of illness related to the consumption of these products. Anyone concerned about an injury or illness should contact a healthcare provider. The following products are subject to recall: Oscar Mayer Select Uncured Turkey Bacon and Oscar Mayer Turkey Bacon Smoked Cured Turkey Chopped and Formed. This problem was discovered by an establishment during an investigation into spoilage-related consumer complaints. Food Safety and Inspection Service routinely conducts recall effectiveness checks to verify recalling firms notifying their customers of the recall, and that steps are taken to make sure that the product is no longer available to consumers. When available, the retail distribution list will be posted on the United States Department of Agriculture Food Safety and Inspection Service's website under Recall and Public Health Alerts. Consumers with questions about the recall can contact the Kraft Heinz Consumers Relations Center at 800-278-3403.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, September the 14th, 2015. I'm Mike Clifford. Among the stories from coast to coast, 20 states getting help processing a backlog of rape evidence, updates on presidential authority to combat climate pollution and congressional efforts to curb carbon emissions, plus big changes to marriage certificates in the Sunshine State. Topping our news, the week begins with another wildfire blazing in California, Governor Jerry Brown again declaring a state of emergency. That response to the Valley Fire, which has already destroyed hundreds of homes and forced thousands to evacuate. Reuters reports the fire is centered about 50 miles west of the state capital in Sacramento. Law enforcement agencies in 20 states soon will be getting grants to solve a long-standing problem. Andrea Sears reports it's evidence in rape cases that often goes untested for years.
New York City District Attorney Cyrus Vance has announced that he will be using $38 million taken in civil forfeitures from international banks to test some 56,000 rape kits sitting in police evidence lockers around the country. Natasha Alexenko is a survivor of sexual assault and founder of Natasha's Project, which is dedicated to clearing the backlog of rape kits. She calls the grants unprecedented.
It's really the first time money has been put out addressing the backlog of kits that aren't necessarily at laboratories but have yet to leave police stations.
The U.S. Justice Department is contributing another $41 million approved by Congress last year to test rape kits in 20 more jurisdictions.
Vance says testing rape kits in other states can help solve crimes in New York. He points out in 2009, Detroit tested 2,000 kits that had been sitting in a warehouse and found DNA matches to unsolved crimes in 23 states.
The British Telegraph reports the U.S. has broken up a threat against Pope Francis, who will visit Washington and other U.S. cities beginning September the 22nd. Michael McCall, chair of the House Committee on Homeland Security, told This Week on ABC he'd learned of the threat from the Secret Service, but he gave no details on how the Pope was to be harmed. A new report from the Center for Biological Diversity highlights how President Obama or any other sitting president has legal authority to prevent some 450 billion tons of climate pollution.
Michael Saul, a senior attorney with the center, says that's how much carbon the president could keep from being extracted on publicly owned lands without waiting for Congress.
This is a hugely powerful and immediately available tool to mitigate the potentially catastrophic effects of climate change.
The report makes the case that any president could stop issuing new leases and prohibit energy development on public lands under powers already established in a series of federal land management acts. Saul admits the notion of telling the energy sector to stop drilling may seem far-fetched in today's political climate. Several coal-producing states, including Colorado, have joined a lawsuit against the EPA's far more conservative Clean Power Plan, claiming regulations would hurt the economy and lead to job loss. I'm Eric Galatis.
And from healthier air to job creation, some experts from Ohio spoke with legislators in Washington, D.C. last week about why the Clean Power Plan is good for the Buckeye State.
The group represented the public health, science, labor, business, and environmental sectors and included Mark Shanahan of New Morning Energy, who served as former Governor Ted Strickland's energy advisor. He says while producing electricity is critical to the economy, he believes reliance on fossil fuels is leaving a legacy of environmental ruin.
Ohio is one of the largest electricity users in the country, and we get a vast majority of it coming from coal. There are other ways we can do it that are much cleaner, that generate jobs, and do not do the environmental damage that fossil fuels do.
The group met with Senator Sherrod Brown and other leaders as congressional hearings on the rule began. The Clean Power Plan calls for Ohio to reduce carbon emissions 28% by 2030. It was recently finalized by the EPA, and the final rule will be published soon.
As the poultry industry across the Midwest works to rebound from the spring outbreak of avian influenza, there are predictions that another round of the disease will hit this fall. John Michelson gives us the outlook now from Minnesota.
Dale Wehoff with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says while it is still unclear how the disease became so widespread, he notes that avian influenza will likely become a permanent part of industrial poultry production.
The model of industrial poultry production that we have finds thousands of birds together that have the same genetic makeup, getting the same food and the same water. So it is really ripe for the spread of disease.
Nearly 50 million chickens and turkeys in the U.S. were lost in the spring outbreak of the H5N2 strain of avian influenza, including 9 million in Minnesota alone.
And finally, in a nod to the legalization of same-sex marriage, Florida marriage certificates and license applications will change starting today to read spouse and spouse instead of bride and groom. Suzanne Potter has our report.
Same-sex marriage has been legal in Florida since January 6th of this year and nationwide since the Supreme Court decision in June. Terry DiCarlo with the GLBT Center of Central Florida applauds the change, saying it's a matter of equality and respect.
When you have a same-sex marriage, there isn't a bride and groom. There's a spouse and a spouse, a bride and a bride, a groom and a groom. So it just should have been spouse and spouse. Simple as that.
Marriage licenses come from one of 67 county clerks in the Sunshine State. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Corey Clement, royalty-free music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.